It was on the corner of 6th, and I think it was Pine, of downtown Seattle this past week, where I spent 4.5 days conducting anti-racism training for a Christian parachurch organization that is seeking to serve at-risk youth who are growing much more multicultural and are seeking to do so in ways that are honoring to God and faithful as well as effective in the delivery of their particular ministry, counseling, and therapy. But on this particular occasion, I had gone for a walk in between the sessions. It was in the evening, and there were a group of skateboarders. Skateboarders and those whom you might consider ones attracting a curious look as you would go by any downtown scene. Multiple piercings, and contrary to the rumor you heard before, I haven't been considering any piercings lately. Multiple piercings and dress that indeed would cause you to take a look and wonder. And I found a very interesting scene. The skateboarders were practicing their tricks and up and down the sidewalks and the concrete planters, you know, the places they're not supposed to go, but showing great skill. And there was a tourist visiting from India, and he was very curious about what they were doing, and he wanted to try. I thought, I gotta hang around for this. And he started talking with one of the leaders of the group who was doing incredible tricks and jumping and flipping his board and all sorts of things. And he said, can you show me? He said, well, I've been doing this for 7 years. It takes a lot of practice and broken bones. I've broken all kinds of things. And I said, I don't think it's a good idea. No, show me. So he put his skateboard down and the fellow gingerly put his foot on it. And he said, you got to get your whole weight over the board. I don't think I will anymore. He backed off right away. He wanted to try something new. Wanted to experience and fill out his experience of his visit to Seattle. This probably was not the way to start, though, I would suggest. And he soon discovered that. In our opening text from Acts, we hear of a wonderful scene. It is one that is pointed to by many scholars and many people, and I think it is something that is very instructive for us. The context is this. Paul has been conducting his missionary work. This is his second missionary trip. He went to a place, a small place called Berea, where he had great success in preaching the resurrected Christ, and people responded. But those who were his opponents heard of his time there, amassed a mob, and were on their way to lynch him. Now, this is a very interesting irony, in fact, because we read in Acts that this is the kind of thing that Paul himself used to do to the Christians, until he was knocked off his horse and had an experience with Jesus that transformed him and converted him to this way. And now he is being chased. So he is escorted out of Berea and taken to Athens, where he thought things might be a little cooler for him away from the lynching mob. And so he arrives there, but he is waiting for others of his party to join him to continue the work of sharing the gospel. And so he has some time to kill, as it were. And he's in Athens, that great, mighty city of intellect, of culture. Birthplace of democracy, Aristotle, Socrates walked the very streets that Paul himself was walking. And Paul looks around. He becomes, in a sense, almost like a tourist, and looks around the great city and observes a number of things. He observes that there are many idols erected throughout the city, and this was common. But one drew his attention in particular, and that was an altar dedicated to the unknown God. Now, there's a history here that's important, I think, for our understanding what is going on. The history is this. Some 6 centuries before, so around the 6th century before the Common Era, there's a story that's told of how these particular altars were created. There was a very severe plague in Athens. And they assembled the wise elders to find out what was going on, why this plague had come upon them, which god had been offended. It was a place that believed in many gods. And so they did an inventory. They could not find out, and the plague was persisting. And finally, they contacted a poet and a wise person in Cyprus, because of Memphides. And he came to do a consultation. And he came up with the idea. He said, get these sheep, all different colored sheep, put them on the hill, Mars Hill, have them starved for some days so they're really hungry, and then release them on this prime grazing land. And any of the sheep who do not graze, just simply lie down, they will tell you something. And so they did that. They starved the sheep, allowed them to come out and to graze, and sure enough, there were a few that did not, that just lay down and refused to graze. And on those sites, they built altars. And those altars were named to the unknown god, because they did not know which god they offended, and so there must be some god they hadn't thought of yet. So 6 centuries later, they had fallen into disrepute, but they had restored one of them, and it was in Athens. And Paul comes across this, and he sees it. And you know Paul. Paul doesn't want to give up an opportunity to bear witness to the curious. And the people invite him. Now, the Areopagus that you heard Gloria speak of is a twofold reference. It is both a place, so it was a civic center where issues of law and issues of philosophy were debated, but it also refers to a group, the group of leading wise elders. So it's both. The Areopagus was a group as well as a place. And they hear about this Paul and his babbling, and he's got some new teaching. And so they invite him to address the Areopagus, to come and tell the story that he has been preaching around the place. Now, what is very interesting is that the text, if you listen to that, you hear, why have they invited Paul? They have invited him because it says they sit around all day looking to discuss and learn what is new. They wanted to know, what is this new teaching that Paul has? They were itchy for something new. They wanted to try it out, like the Indian tourist on the skateboard. Paul goes and addresses them. But I want us to pay attention to the way in which Paul does this, because it speaks to how we live in the marketplace of ideas and philosophies and theologies and religions today in the 21st century. Paul does not go in with guns blazing. Paul starts where the curious are. Paul says to them, I see that you are a religious people, very religious people. And I notice that you have an altar addressed to the unknown god. So what Paul is doing is, on one hand, in a sense, affirming them to some extent, but also challenging them to open up their curiosity beyond just looking for something new and novel, to really probe what may be the truth behind it. Would you not agree that sometimes, perhaps yourselves or other people you know, prefer to gain and gather as much knowledge as possible, want to read everything on a subject? You're not willing, perhaps, or people you know are not willing to commit to something. They want to find out something more. There's just one more thing to know about this in their pursuit of truth. Paul is inviting them, even as through us as a community of faith, inviting us to see that that groping is something to be affirmed. He says, you are a religious people. You are groping after God. It is what he's saying to them is that you are like in a dark place, a dark room, groping after this intense commitment and desire to be in relationship to God, but there is no light. You're groping in the darkness. This unknown God, let me introduce you to this unknown God. And Paul uses that as an opportunity to talk about, and this is very, very important, to talk about God as having created all things and all people. Now, they could relate to that because in Athenian philosophy, they recognize that divinity is accessible to everybody. But Paul goes further. This God has created all people and all things and even the appetite to quest after this God, because this God is urgently desiring relationship with each and every one. And Paul begins to make a testimony that I think is instructive to us today. What I find very powerful about this, and it corresponds to some of what I was talking about this past week, is what Paul begins to do in challenging both their view of God and what are impediments to it because of their attitudes towards others. Paul goes on to say, in defining humanity's creation, that God has created every people's, every language under the sun, under the earth. You see, at that time, Greeks were a little bit pompous, a little bit arrogant, and they looked down on people they considered uncouth and uneducated as barbarians, and they were not worthy of the great features and the great gifts of society and of the world. The bounty of the wisdom of the world shouldn't be wasted on those people. And Paul is clear to draw the connection between their misguided questing after an understanding of God and their attitude towards other people. And says that having created them, God has imbued every peoples with a very special status. And that meant that if they were going to pursue this groping after God, they needed to expand their view of welcome and hospitality to all the peoples of the world. Does that sound familiar to you? Does that sound familiar in the teachings of Jesus? That the way in which we bear witness to the curious begins with the way Jesus summed up the law. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, mind, and strength, and thy neighbor as thyself. Our capacity to really understand and know God is tied up with our willingness to be vulnerable, present, and caring of humanity. When we say humanity, that's very big. Where it gets challenging is your neighbor right next to you, the person in the next door cubicle, the difficult neighbor, the relative who's driving you crazy, the people who are plotting against you, have deceived you and betrayed you. Our ability to love them and our ability to move toward them with grace and with forgiveness is tied up with our ability to receive what God has in store for us. The other thing that I think that is instructive is that Paul challenges us to ask the question, both then, 2,000 years ago and today, what are the idols that we have constructed? We can look with a wagging finger at the Greeks and the people of Athens and say, those idols, how foolish. We believe in one God. We don't do that. And the truth of the matter is that any time we place conditions on our belief in God, any time we show that there are things we preference over a deep, intimate relationship with God, that is an idol. An idol is that which replaces the supremacy of God and competes for our allegiance. Addictions are idols. The pursuit, intellectual pursuit, with an unwillingness to commit to truth, and an intellectual pursuit alone of truth, unwilling to commit to it, is an idol. Because it separates us from God. It says that we have the capacity in our own arrogance to know God. And so the question implicit in what Paul is asking them and asking us is not so much, do you know God? Does whatever God you conceive of know you? It's a wonderful poem I'd like to share with you that I came across. It's Mary Kerr. Mary Kerr, now a poet, but she shares in her writings how she grew up. Grew up in a very abusive home. Abused by her father, her mother tried to kill her. She had all kinds of issues around her body, around feeling unworthy, and did not find any solace at all in the church until she was grasped in her questing for healing by God. This is what she wrote in response. A poem is entitled Oratorio for the Unbecoming. The heart is a mirror also, and in my chest I felt this tight bud of petals held a face. God with his stare of a zillion suns, he swears now this form is carved by him. Have mercy, the soul, singer says, and I say, blessed be the air, I breathe these words with you, for it makes my body wonder. The Athenians will always find themselves incapable of receiving this kind of affirmation because theirs is a quest to grasp and define and pigeonhole God. And Paul is saying that there is this God who seeks to know you and you and you and give experience to that which is most holy. And so there are two main things that we learn, I believe, and experience from this particular text. It is that we are meant to adopt a posture of hospitality and grace when we bear witness to those of no faith, different faith, challenging faith, agnostic faith, whatever. That we do not come in with guns blazing and with a triumphant attitude, but we recognize where can we go to start where they are. In 1992, at Harvard University, graduate students started something called the Veritas Forum. And what they wanted to do was, in the context of academia and the brightest leaders of the country and of various nations, they wanted to create space to debate and explore real life. You can check it out at veritas.org. And what they have done is insisted on finding the connections where people are, in their places of study, in the pub, in the local barbershop, wherever they are, opportunities to see the connection between the groping and the questing of people's everyday life and that which God is trying to do and come near to them. And I think sometimes we have felt in the church that we are ill-equipped to be able to carry this message. And if that is true of any of you, or as many of you as this is true for, then in a sense, this congregation, to some extent, I have failed. Because the call upon those who would be followers of Jesus is that, as Peter's epistle says, we be prepared and ready to always give account of the hope that is in us. We do not come to church and come to worship and sing hymns just for ourselves, just to grow in faith and be more holy and connected to God. We come in such a way to be emboldened and healed so we can be sent out into the daily routines of life with the people we do life with to help them. And in so doing, we also help ourselves because we learn it's not one way. But to help that relationship grow in discerning where God is at work and what response is necessary for that groping, that appetite for God. The people you work with every day, the people you associate with in your service clubs, your book club, your neighborhood, the people you get together for lunch with, you go for a beer with, all of those people we must believe are groping and earnestly desiring to connect with God, even if they're not aware of it yet. And they place in place of that groping idols, addictions, questings, preoccupations, distractions. We're always, like the Athenians, looking for the next new thing. The most extreme reality show, the most extreme sports show, the most extreme makeover, the newest dress, the newest suit, the newest car, the newest iPod. New. Our son told us at mealtime the other day something he learned in Faith Forum last week. In the film on stewardship, I think it's 80, 90% of the things that we buy that are new either become obsolete or not of any use or interest to us after 8 months. You see, we are more like the Athenians than we'd like to admit. We want constantly the next new thing. Paul is saying, this God whom you are most urgently seeking after in all of your questings, preoccupations, and distractions, wants to know you and wants to become available so much so in your relationships that you also can call other people to notice how this God is pursuing them. And so we as a community of faith are meant to help equip each other to bear testimony to the curious, including ourselves. A week ago, our family was invited to join with a Jewish family for Seder. A wonderful experience. Welcomed into the home, sharing life and conversation, and entering into a ritual that Jesus practiced every year of his life on earth and redefined as part of the Lord's Supper that we celebrate from time to time. Conversations around the table with individuals there provided ample occasion to talk about common questing after God. And what that had to do, because the one who invited me, my Jewish buddy that I play hockey with sometimes, what does it have to do with hockey? What does it have to do with running a business? What does it have to do with what their daughter was studying at university? What does it have to do with the frustrations of daily life? What does it have to do with dealing with a chronic illness someone around the table spoke of? All those venues were occasions where bearing witness could take place. And witness was born to me as well. To the unknown God, this God is known to us through Jesus Christ. And this God knows you and all those with whom you are in relationship. It is our challenge and privilege to make that apparent. Help your friends, neighbors, buddies, colleagues know that God knows them. Amen.